We're meeting the new Chief State Forester here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Heather Berkland is a 20-year career veteran of the Department of Natural Resources and the first woman to lead the division overseeing our state's 17 million acres of forest land. She was previously Deputy Division Administrator of Field Operations, leading public and private lands programs, fire protection programs, along with forestry certification and partnerships. She started her career as a field forester in Merrill, Crandon, and Mercer. What do you want to ask the new Chief State Forester? It's 800-642-1234. Heather, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, give us a bird's eye view, if you could, of our forest land in Wisconsin. How expansive is it? Where is it clustered?
Yes, we are lucky to have a land base, forest land base of about 17 million acres. And contrary to many beliefs that the public or the state manages and owns the majority, it actually is private land ownership at 11.5 million acres. And about 9 million is considered family forests. And that is scattered across the state. Public land, we have about 5.2 million acres in the state. It's roughly 1.2 million acres. And our county forests are actually the largest public land managers at 2.4 million acres. And we also are lucky to have the Shawmigan-Nicolet National Forest.
Yes.
And then our tribal lands as well for public ownership. So we have a diverse ownership of forest land, diverse species and forest ecosystems across the state. And obviously, we have diverse landscapes and geography with the driftless area, you know, pattern ag land with woodlots, and then the expansive kind of north woods landscape as well.
When you say diverse species, what is that biodiversity like?
We have, you know, a range from, you know, the oak hickory type forests in the south, patches of walnut in far southwest, to vast expanses of northern hardwoods in the north, and then, you know, spattered amongst our aspen and our pine forests. Mm-hmm.
When you point out the private land ownership of these forests, would you say that our forest lands are expanding or contracting in Wisconsin? You know, one of the threats is this loss of open space, loss to development. Is there development of forest land in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that has definitely been something that's we recognize as a challenge, and it's for the past several decades, and that's kind of that fragmentation. And it's really about land ownership kind of changing hands more quickly than maybe historically. Historically, you know, you had landowners that held on to their properties, maybe were farming and also had woodland. And then just in the last several decades, it's really been kind of changing over. We had historically large industrial land ownership connected with mills, and those lands have kind of converted over as well to smaller inholdings, which, you know, the important piece is if landowners are keeping their land in forest and just recognizing the importance of managing their properties. But it does get more difficult on that kind of education piece on, you know, managing and keeping large blocks of land in forests. We do have a conservation easement program that's been, you know, quite a benefit to keeping lands in forest across the state. About 300,000 acres is in that program at this time. So, and then the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund has also been a benefit to acquiring land, you know, high-value land across the state.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Heather Berkland. She's the new chief of the Forestry Division for the state DNR. We're looking at the work of her division, her priorities as the head. You can join in. What questions do you have for the new chief of state forestry? Do you work in forestry or the timber industry? Or are you an outdoor enthusiast? What would you like to say? Join in at 800-642-1234. Heather, how is the DNR working with the forest products industry, huge industry in Wisconsin, mills, timber harvesters? How do you manage the best interests of the industry as well as the state forest conservation efforts?
Yeah, that's always a great question and a balance that we need to consider. And, you know, as you mentioned, the forest industry is super critical to the health of our economy in Wisconsin at $24 billion annually that contributes to the state's economy and over 60,000 jobs in that forest industry. And so it is critical that we have a healthy and robust, diverse industry for long-term sustainable forestry and so that we can maintain that landscape. And so I would just reiterate that the Division of Forestry has been, our foundation has really been on that partnership and that partnerships for that social, economic, and ecological balance. And so we partner and collaborate not only with industry to make sure that we have the markets, that we have the capacity to manage our woods, bring wood to the market, use the products that we do every day, but also have that balance of preservation so that people have the opportunity to recreate and that across the state, which is also an important forest recreation brings in $5.5 billion to the economy on average. So that balance, and I think just recognize that, you know, active management, working forests can definitely complement our tourism and our recreation. So it really is about that balance.
When you look at recreation and striking a balance, how do you do that with ATV use in our forest lands?
I would compare it with any of the kind of the recreational stakeholders. You know, there are definitely areas that can be set aside for those types of activities. And then there's areas set aside for, you know, that remote hunting opportunities, areas that we are now looking at for, you know, mountain biking and skiing. And so there's a lot of interest groups out there that have a vested interest in offering a variety of recreational opportunities. So it's really having those conversations in place and looking at various properties and our management plans, our master plans, we call them, and kind of the public input into that process and using that as our guidance on how we plan to manage some of our public lands, in particular our state lands.
But just give us the nuts and bolts here on ATVs. What do they do when you're using them? What do they do to the ecology or, you know, is there an impact when you use ATVs in forests?
We have a guidance in place on development of trails so that we want to minimize that impact. You know, it's similar to any road system through a block of forest, you know, just trying to mitigate erosion potential, you know, and just offering that opportunity that people can still recreate in places where ATVs aren't, but also recognizing that, you know, ATVs are something that is the public has said is an important piece in areas of the state as that kind of recreation tourism opportunity as well.
We're talking with Wisconsin's Chief State Forester, Heather Berkland of the DNR. What questions do you have about forest land management practices? What do you want to know about fire protection plans, invasives, conservation efforts? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Division Chief Heather Berkland here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're getting to know the DNR's new forestry division chief here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Heather Berkland is a career veteran of the DNR with most of her 20-year tenure in the Northwoods. She leads the Division of Forestry from her office in Rhinelander. In a bit of bio here, she grew up in the Boscobel and Reedsburg areas, hunting and picking morels on her family's 120 acres, exploring the hills and river bottoms of the Driftless area. What do you want to ask the state forestry chief? What about managing invasive species and fire protection? It's 800-642-1234. And Division Chief Heather Berkland stays with us. Let's take a call now. Christian is joining us from Madison. Hi, Christian.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
My parents have about 140 acres in Buffalo County. Very high whitetail population there, but it's mostly been in forestry for a while. It was in the CREEP program, if you're familiar with that. But they're moving now to try to be more sustainable. They want to make sure that, you know, that it can still hold that property because the recreational tax bracket is pretty high. So they want to make sure they can participate as fully as possible and be, you know, make sure that forest is preserved and have good stewardship. So what would be the ideal for them? To combine some of that with the whitetail and the forest.
Christian, thanks. Heather, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for that. And, you know, part of the job that I really enjoyed was working with private landowners and the passion that they have. And so it is exciting to hear that they want to continue to think about the future. And there are various programs that you may already be aware of. We do have our managed forest law program, where we, you know, kind of develop a management plan for reduced taxes and kind of offering the various objectives for landowners. But that's not always for everyone. There is connecting with a local wildlife biologist as well for potentially some opportunities for maybe DMAP, and that has with deer management as part of the driver there. You know, and just looking at also potential easement programs or, you know, opportunities of putting land in certain, you know, trusts for maintaining it as forest land. So I do think that there are opportunities, and I would encourage you to check out the our DNR website and, you know, kind of type in forestry and also the other programs. As far as kind of land acquisition, land management, and there's a slew of resources there that we can connect you with one of our local professionals and talk through your specific situation.
Christian, thanks for the call. You know, we watched, Heather, as the West went up in flames last year. Is Wisconsin in danger of such devastating fires ravaging our forests?
You know, we definitely... fire is definitely an important piece of the work that we do. And then we also always need to kind of consider that risk, especially in our urban interface, our wildland fire-urban interface. You know, the Western landscape and climate is a bit different than we have here. They have much more contiguous kind of forests. And we've been blessed that we've been able to kind of keep a healthy forest by actively kind of managing. And so that helps kind of diversify the potential for fire to spread. But, you know, we are not out of the water. Obviously, in 2013, we had one of the largest fires we had in history in the German Road fire. You know, on average, we have between, 800 and 900 fires a year that burn about 2,300 acres. So definitely something that you want to consider. And our Wildland Urban Interface Program that I mentioned, WUI, definitely working with communities and our local volunteer fire departments and kind of assessing properties, opportunities for homeowners to kind of reduce that risk in their own backyard. So definitely something that we our job contributes to the state. We invest in resources and equipment, training. We also have partnerships with the Great Lakes Forest Fire Compact, and that there are grants available for fire reduction and prevention.
And I would assume that's all under the division's fire protection program.
Yes.
Under that umbrella. Heather Berkland with us, the chief of the forestry division for the state DNR, taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's go to George now, joining us from Wausau. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is regarding maximum harvest in the Northern Highland American Legion Forest. I was at a public hearing up in Woodruff a few years back, and they were discussing outlining the different levels of harvest in the forest up there, and I was just curious what maximum harvest means and how that relates to the other levels of harvesting the northern, the NHAL.
Thank you, George. Yeah, Heather.
Yes, you know, and I don't know that some of that was a result of some legislation that occurred for us to be taking a hard look at our state forests and our state properties and making sure that we are managing where we have that opportunity to contribute to the demand and the supply of our marketplace. So again, our master plans on our state forests really are the driver, and then balancing that with the legislation that comes to fruition and making sure that we're aligned and, you know, still having that balance of the recreation, the social, and the ecological piece. And so really just mapping out where we are doing more active management, where we will set aside areas where there may be less management across all of our state properties.
Yeah, and, you know, partnerships have been such an important piece for you in managing forest land. What happens, though, when there is conflict, when there are disagreements between how to manage these forests?
Hopefully it's a conversation we can all have and just kind of recognize, again, that we need to collaborate if we really want to sustain the forest, our forest landscape, to have a forest industry and to just have forests for long-term in Wisconsin. And so, you know, making sure that we're listening to each other's needs, but really keeping the objective of the health of our landscape in the forefront. Mm. But you're right. I think it's with any, you know, any type of large public entities is trying to find that balance and getting folks to the table, listening to concerns, and just trying to address as best we can.
Let's bring in Aaron joining us from Madison. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So it's a real joy to just listen and hear the ways that which you are engaging across sectors and in forestry. And I think you're also an inspiration for resource professionals across, like, you know, young and old alike. So I'm wondering if you could just highlight, like who, you know, what, who have been your mentors? And also more specifically, like, what trees have been your mentors over the years, and maybe what wisdom have you learned from that as we look to go outside more in these days? So thank you for my call. I'll take an answer off the air here.
Yes, no, thank you for that. I have been very lucky to have been able to work with many great staff and partners throughout the forestry community, and just trying to be that sponge and absorb all the information I can, and historic perspective, the practical sense, the you know, just all of the technical skills has been very valuable to me. And, you know, recognizing, obviously, that women in this profession have been underrepresented, you know, and I think just in general, the forestry profession, you know, doesn't have as much diversity as some of the other professions. But just hopefully I can be that face and get people excited, and just recognizing that diversity and, you know, people working together is where we need to go in the future. You know, so I had, again, just lots of folks that have helped my career along the way. And I would say, you know, take the time to really observe trees. You know, trees aren't like the fun, furry creatures, you know, that we all like to watch and observe. But trees really are amazing, you know, living beings that that evolve slowly over time, but they need to be tended, and they change as well, and they are renewable. So just thinking about that when you're out recreating or walking down your city block, and just really appreciating that tree and what it gives gives us.
All trees are your mentors.
right. You know, but I would say I definitely, the days on a quiet winter day, snowshoeing through a hemlock hardwood forest, the quiet, the chickadees, and just those days would just bring much peace to me.
We only have about 15 seconds left, though, and I want to just know, are you noticing climate change in our state forests?
Yes, climate is here and definitely something in the forefront. We'll be aligning some of our initiatives with what the governor may be bringing forward as well. The department also has a blueprint for climate action. And so we feel that much of sustainable management and things that we are doing in the state will complement climate mitigation in the future, but definitely something to keep your eyes on this coming year.
Heather, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And please check out our website and feel free to reach out and appreciate those trees.
Heather Berkland, the Wisconsin DNR's chief state forester. She was appointed to the post by DNR Secretary Preston Cole in October. Coming up, we talk with a journalist on Capitol Hill about the events following the storming of the Capitol building last week. How do you feel about the House voting to impeach the president? 800-642-1234. That's after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The House moved swiftly Wednesday, voting 232 to 197 to impeach President Trump for incitement of insurrection for his role in last week's deadly attack on the Capitol, becoming the first president in U.S. history to be impeached for a second time. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opened hours of debate on the floor.
He must go. He is a clear and present danger to the nation that we all love.
How do you feel about the House vote? What would you watch for in a Senate trial? How would you feel if it happened after Inauguration Day? It's 800-642-1234. Grace Seegers is a political reporter for CBS News. She was inside the Senate chamber last week during the attack. Grace, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Grace, what were your takeaways from the debate on the House floor yesterday?
Well, I was in the House chamber yesterday as well, and I would say that the mood was extremely tense. There was a lot of disdain on both sides for each of members of the other party. I also could really tell that there was a very big ideological divide between Democrats and Republicans in the arguments, where Democrats were arguing that this was very necessary and Republicans were arguing that this was just a retaliatory measure by Democrats who have always wanted to get rid of the president. That being said, 10 Republicans did vote in favor of impeachment, which makes it the most bipartisan impeachment that we've ever seen before. So in many ways, it is historic, and that is one of those ways.
Why do you think that Republicans didn't feel it was politically safe to impeach him?
Well, President Trump still has a very strong and supportive base. We have seen that from his voters and his supporters. As the president is very fond of pointing out, 74 million people voted for him. Now, 80 million people voted for Biden, but that's still a very significant chunk of people. And I think that a lot of Republicans are kind of biding their time to see how long President Trump holds his grip on the party before taking any direct moves against him.
Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California said a vote to impeach would further divide this nation. He also said,
the president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding.
But McCarthy stopped short of impeachment. Where do you think Republicans stand in regards to impeachment of the president?
I think Minority Leader McCarthy's words are very indicative of where the party is. So McCarthy last week voted to object to the Electoral College results. So it's a bit interesting to now hear him say that he doesn't want any more division, but is ready for unity across government. But I think that McCarthy is walking a very fine line where he voted against impeachment, but he also said that he supported censure of the president. So I do think that there are a lot of Republicans who are angry with the president and who do feel that he should have done more last week to prevent the rioters. But I think that they are unwilling to go so far as support impeachment, but would rather support some kind of censure. Now, it should be noted that a censure resolution would pretty much just be a formal condemnation of the president, but would not have any practical consequences.
Yeah, it wouldn't bar him from future office.
Exactly.
We're talking with Grace Seegers, a political journalist at CBS News. She's giving us the latest developments on Capitol Hill. Let's bring in John now, joining us from Stockton, California. Hi, John. What is on your mind?
Hi, how are you, ladies, today?
Doing well. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I actually had two concerns. My first one would be about the impeachment and why there is such a strong push to impeach the president with 6 days left in his presidency, which he has stated will be a peaceful transition. I'm wondering if it's more of a message being sent and trying to divide our country instead of having a valid reason for it. That was my first point.
And Jen, I want to pause there on that first point, asking what do Democrats hope to get out of this? Because President Trump, as John says, will leave office in 6 days.
You know, that's a great point and one that Republicans have brought up frequently as well. And the fact is that the Senate probably isn't going to bring up the impeachment trial until after the inauguration of Biden. So a lot of Republicans are saying this is just a retaliatory move. Now, something that Democrats are arguing is that it's about principle, and also they want to bar him from ever holding office again. So if he is convicted, then Congress can vote on whether he should ever be able to hold office again. And a lot of Democrats say that, no, he shouldn't. So it's partially about the principle and partially about ensuring that he can't hold office again.
Let's bring in Cole now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole. What do you think?
Hi. I definitely believe that impeachment was the right course of action, and that, you know, somebody needed to be held accountable for what happened, and especially the president who did not fulfill his duties in protecting the Constitution and the office on last week, Wednesday. So I find it absurd that the Republican arguments are we need to come together and heal and that this impeachment divides us, because we can't have healing without accountability. You don't commit a crime against somebody and say, okay, well, get over it. We need to heal. No, accountability is part of the healing process, and I think it just drives me nuts that Republicans either are not being objective in looking at this, or they're just playing politics and being completely disingenuous in the process.
Grace, did you hear this sentiment from Democrats on the floor yesterday?
Yes, I did, actually. That is pretty much exactly the argument that a lot of Democrats were making. Congressman McGovern, who is the chair of the Rules Committee, said at one point that he didn't want to be lectured by Republicans saying that they now wanted unity after last week they had voted to object to the Electoral College results. So I do think that there was a lot of anger on the Democratic side and feeling as if Republicans were being disingenuous in their calls to unity.
Can you paint a picture for us of the scene there at the Capitol as thousands of National Guard members were stationed in the Capitol during this floor session? What is it like in the building?
Yeah, I mean, my immediate reaction is that it was extremely weird. So I entered the Capitol yesterday, and I was walking through the Capitol Visitor Center to get from the Senate side to the House side. And lying on the floor were literally hundreds of National Guardsmen, most of them napping because they had been up overnight guarding the Capitol. So many of them napping on the hard marble floors of the Capitol, some of them cradling large guns as they napped. And it was just a very bizarre scene to walk through this large room that is usually filled with tourists and instead see so many members of the military.
You were at the Capitol in the Senate chamber, I understand, on last Wednesday during the insurrection. What was that like?
Yes, I was in the Senate chamber. And I mean, honestly, it was terrifying. And it becomes even more scary with each passing day when we learn more about what happened on Wednesday, because at the time, I honestly didn't really know what was going on. I just knew that we were being locked in the Senate chamber because of a security threat. I later found out, days later, that we came within literally seconds of having the rioters enter the chamber while the senators and myself were still in there. So in hindsight, it's even scarier than it was at the time. And at the time, it was pretty scary.
Where were you evacuated to? Where did they take you?
So I can't say specifically, but it was a secure location within the Capitol complex. And it was just also very odd. I basically sat on the floor for 5 hours, and the only information that we would get would be from overhearing what was on the walkie-talkies from Capitol Police and other law enforcement near us. So it was a scary experience.
How are armed forces preparing for Inauguration Day next week?
Well, we are going to be seeing around 20,000 National Guard in Washington, D.C., which is an enormous amount. You're also seeing large fencing around the Capitol complex and road closures for several blocks around the complex. So you can hardly get within walking distance unless you have a credential. So I think what they're trying to do right now is just block it off as much as possible and really heighten the security presence so that even if anyone did come with the intent to disrupt, they wouldn't be able to get close enough to do so.
Very quickly, what happens to this article of impeachment? Will the House hold on to it? Will it immediately send it to the Senate?
So it's unclear. I believe that the House is going to send it to the Senate as soon as possible, with the knowledge that the Senate would not take it up until after President-elect Biden has been inaugurated. There were suggestions of holding on to the articles for the first 100 days of his term, but I do think that most Democrats want to get this over as soon as possible while the memories of the attack are still fresh.
Grace, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Grace Seegers is a political reporter for CBS News. Coming up, we talk with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin about the impeachment vote and what will happen in the Senate. What do you want to ask the senator from Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have been talking about a bipartisan group of House members who voted to impeach President Trump yesterday for inciting an insurrection at the Capitol last week. Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is on the line now. What do you want to tell Senator Baldwin? How would you feel about the Senate removing President Trump from office or disqualifying him from holding office in the future? What are your top priorities for Democrats who will soon control the White House and Congress? We're at 800-642-1234. Senator Baldwin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's good to join you.
Take us back to last week and the breach. You tweeted to let people know you were safe. What did you observe?
Well, I was on the floor of the Senate. We were, as everyone knows, counting the electoral ballots from each state, and an objection was lodged against the tally in the state of Arizona. And we were mid-debate in the Senate on that objection when I had gotten to the Senate chamber. I certainly could hear the gathering folks outside, but they were still outside. But it wasn't so long after that that we were in a shutdown situation on the Senate floor. At first, it was determined that was probably the safest place for us to remain. And then, as everyone knows, at some point after that, when the breach was coming towards the Senate side, there was a decision made to evacuate the Senate chamber to a location outside of the Capitol, but on the Capitol complex. And it was very obvious that there was a big disturbance happening in the Capitol building. But as far as I know, there was no face-to-face encounter of senators who had been on the floor as they were being evacuated with the insurgent group.
You saw the House, of course, voted to impeach the president yesterday. All eyes are on the Senate now. Will you vote to convict?
Well, the first question is when does the impeachment matter come to the Senate? The Speaker of the House has some discretion about that. And Mitch McConnell, the current leader of the United States Senate, has indicated that he's not going to convene the Senate early. In other words, we're scheduled to come back into session on January 19th. Very shortly thereafter, the leadership of the Senate is going to change because we're going to swear in two additional senators from the state of Georgia, and a 50-50 Democrat-Republican tie will be broken by Vice President Kamala Harris once she is sworn in. So the dynamics of control of the Senate is going to change that week.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll be up to Senator Schumer to schedule the trial, and all of us right now are very hopeful that we'll be able to both consider the trial as well as move forward on confirming Joe Biden's cabinet nominees and beginning the business of the new administration, because as we know, both are urgent. It is essential in my mind that we hold this president accountable for inciting an insurrection against Congress and our democracy. And it is also critical during this time of crisis in the United States with the pandemic and economic challenges that we also stand up a government which, quite frankly, right now is very hollowed out by resignations, et cetera.
But is it possible to, in Biden's words, bifurcate, right, to hold a trial and then at the same time also be working through the confirmation of nominees?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. You know, there's been a number of discussions, whether it's doing legislative and executive business in the morning and doing a trial in the afternoon, or, you know, every other day. All of those things are possibilities and prospects. And I believe that we can do both. And when the Senate leadership changes, the resolution that will set up the conduct of the trial will be written by Senator Schumer, who I believe will have it as a high priority to be able to move ahead on all of these critical priorities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. Let's bring in a call now. Dave is with us from Madison. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. First of all, I think the impeachment is absolutely necessary. This sort of behavior cannot be allowed to stand. But more to the point, I'm wondering why there's been no talk of censuring the House and Senate members who helped to perpetrate the underlying lie that caused the whole thing.
So there has been actually, at least on media that I've seen a fair amount of discussion of that. The question I think that is most timely is, there's allegations that members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, actually aided and abetted the folks that violently entered the Capitol with an aim to disrupting our democracy and the counting of the electoral ballots. And my understanding is that that is an ongoing investigation. So I certainly believe that there has to be accountability, but starting with the President of the United States, who incited a crowd of thousands, urging them to move to the Capitol and disrupt our joint session of Congress, doing our constitutional duty to count and certify the ballots.
Dave, thanks. Let's bring in Kay now in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I am very dismayed at yesterday's testimony that so little attention was given either in the impeachment document or in the testimony from Democrats about Trump's failure to protect the Capitol once the assault began. He didn't call in reinforcements. It's even said that he was happy about it. And certainly his remarks when he finally did say something about loving them, that's all more criminal than anything else. I hope the Senate, when this comes to trial, will put more emphasis on that aspect of yesterday's debacle.
Senator Baldwin.
Yes, well, obviously we have another major ceremony coming up at the Capitol next week with the inauguration of Joe Biden as our next president. And I will tell you that in terms of security for that, not only have they been planning that very significant ceremony for, frankly, years, but also have been informed by what we saw at the Capitol last week, Wednesday, to strengthen the security for that. I think it's going to be so important for the world to see the transition of power, especially after we've been so shaken by the insurrection of last week, and know that we are prepared. But it's very clear that we were underprepared, and the threats that were already known about activities on January 6th were not taken seriously enough, and our Capitol Police were not ready for such an insurrection coming to the Capitol.
Senator Baldwin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tammy Baldwin is a second-term Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, previously represented the Madison area in the House for seven terms, first woman elected to Congress from Wisconsin. And just a note, WPR has reached out to every member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation with an invitation to join us on the air and share with you what they experienced last week. Four members have joined us on the Ideas Network to date, and we hope to bring you more conversations with other members of Congress soon. Just ahead, we get an update on how the Packers are doing as they start their playoff run and what the sports world has learned amid the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.